Penny Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. Who is this Moe guy? No one talks about Moe. That's me. All right, so welcome. Welcome. Today is the 25th of June, 2025. Yeah, so it is. 2025. Wow. 2 days ago was the anniversary of my dad's 100th birthday. So that was cool. I had to think about that. My dad would have been 100 years old today. Well, 2 days ago. And he wasn't. But, God, what a good guy he was. And, yeah, that was neat and cool. And he was born in Egypt, Cairo. Giza, I think. There might have been a hospital there. Not next to the pyramids. Giza is an actual city. And, yeah, that's right. And the house where he was raised is still there. And he, yeah, it's very cool. Kind of neat. I talked to my cousin, Ahmed, who lives in Giza in a nice apartment he owns there. And my uncle, his brother, Uncle Muhammad, and his brother, also Ahmed, and he lives there. And so, it's nice. Family. Gotta have family. I have family. And I, you know, saw my kids and my grandkids this weekend. Not all my grandkids. My eldest granddaughter was off gallivanting somewhere around the country having fun. Good for her. Someone should be having fun, don't you think? You know, not everyone is able to have fun all the time. We're going to have fun today. Yes, we are. We are going to have fun today. We're not going to bother with a lot of the humdrummery that's going on. Let's not worry about that stuff. We're going to talk about a fascinating subject today. What, you may be asking? Tarot. Tarot or not tarot? That is the question. And if you want nice big biceps, then get out there and row. But not me. Let's do the tarot. One of the things that people don't realize about tarot is how incredibly important it is in everything that we like to do. Metaphysics and just, it's awfully darned important. Why? Because it is an encyclopedia. It's a book. It's a novel. It's a dictionary. It's a thesaurus. Yes. It's all sorts of stuff. It's wonderful. Wonderful. We're going to talk all about that today. If you've ever picked up a tarot deck, then this next 55 minutes or 50 minutes now, sorry, is for you. I guess it's not that much. I have a clock on the wall that the battery is going on it, so it's showing the wrong time. At least it's the right. Well, I guess it isn't that either. I need to change the battery, so get a new one. But tarot, it's going to be a really, I think, hopefully for you, it's going to be a fascinating hour. Or 50, whatever, forget that. And for me, it's going to be fascinating as well, because it's one of my favorite subjects. I've studied tarot since I was 10. Yeah, so for a long time, 500-600 years. And diligently, for way too many years to even think about. It has fascinated me. It's one of those things that the minute you start, you go, wait a minute. There's more to this than meets the proverbial eye. And that was for sure. Just like the I Ching, when you say, wait a minute, there's more to this. And there is more to the I Ching. And there's more to just about anything that you can get involved in. So we're going to talk about all of that and maybe some tips for you, some tips on how to study Tarot a little bit, how to get something out of it. Let's start with something that's rather obvious, and that is the anatomy of a Tarot deck. Pretty easy stuff. Now, first of all, before we get into that, so there's a preamble to all of this, and that is that Tarot is first and foremostly, not like that, a game. It is a game. It's a game that was played quite a bit in the 13th century. And it may have been invented in the 12th century, late, but really got its true teeth, so to speak, into people's arms and in their gambling part of their arms in the 13th century. So they really got the bug. And part of the problem was that it became a gambling game. It still is a gambling game, even if you're just gambling for points, which is really what people do. It was a lot like bridge. It is a lot like bridge still. And the game that really influences our modern Tarot deck the most is French Tarot, although actually that influences our modern playing cards the most because their suits are very much like ours, the hearts, clubs, spades, and diamonds. That's true. But the Spanish Tarot decks with the espada and the, you know, the cups and the swords, the cups and the discs and the batons, the Italian and the Spanish suits, Spanish and Italian. I said that. And there are all sorts of others. I mean, all sorts of cards. Cards have been all ton of fun for many, many years. But the church frowned upon anything that was had to do with gambling, but obviously not all priests and popes looked down upon gambling because some of them actually loved to do it themselves. Pardon me. So somewhere along the line, people said, hey, why don't we sneak in some iconography that is temporal? Why don't we do that, you know, of the church? So they did. So, for example, a hermit, who would be St. Anthony, or the tower, which would be St. Barbara, or the wheel, which might be St. Catherine, or whatever, whatever, you know, St. Oswald of Northumbria, which may have been one representation of the hanged man. And there are others as well. So what they did is they started sneaking these in. At one time, the seven liberal arts and sciences were shown. So it was really very, very clever. And that's how many of our modern Tarot decks became what they are, including the devil. So modern decks became, you know, what they are from attempting to slide into home base underneath the catcher's mitt. You didn't want to get caught. And so they were really an attempt to appease. So there is nothing mystical or magical about the pieces of paper in a tarot deck. I know. And you don't have to wrap them in silk. You can. I think there's nothing wrong with that. But it has to do with you, the reader. They're cardboard. They really are. I love the idea of making something very special out of them because they're yours. And the truth of the matter is, as a professional tarot card reader, which I have been for, going on over 50 years. The thing is that people don't know how to shuffle cards very well. So they could bias your deck. In other words, they could crimp a card or ruin a card or break a card because some foreign decks are very brittle. The IJJ Swiss deck, as it's, you know, just one of the first decks, actually the first tarot deck imported to this country by Stuart Kaplan, that deck is very brittle, and if someone gives it too much of a twist or too much of a thing, it'll break. The card will actually break. I had my death card or my devil card break. I was like, oh, that's not good. So I still have all the cards I've ever owned, which I think is pretty cool. So the idea is that cards are cards. Cards are cards. But it's what you know about them and know how to use them. So the cards are for playing a game. And we can call it Tarot or Taroki or just Tarot. And T-A-R-O-T is, of course, the French spelling. And that's why we call it Tarot. Some people call it Tarot. And that's fine. Does it really matter how someone pronounces other than, you know, like, I don't like, you know, you kind of get over it. So that's okay. Doesn't matter how they pronounce it. Does it really, really, does it matter? No, it really doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. yeah, sometimes it does, I guess. But it's not that big a deal. Although there are some interesting things about the way it's spelled. Right? Well, we can get into that later if we get there. Has to do with Ta being the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So we have the beginning and the end, TT, and Alpha and Omega being the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet. So we have A and O, as in Ta and Ro, and then R in the middle, Resh, being the sun card. So, wait a minute, the sun is the middle of our solar system. I know, I do stuff like that all the time, and it's fun, but who knows? Yeah, it's fun to do. And you should do that. That's what occultists do. That's what metaphysicians do. That's what we spend our lives doing. And then we sit around toward the end of our lives and go, what did I do all that for? And you know why? Because it's wonderful and it's marvelous. And really, I should sit down and put all this stuff in a book someday. Maybe. We'll see. So the idea of Tarot is that it has an anatomy. And the anatomy is two major breakout parts. And one is the major arcana, which means the big secret, and the minor arcana, which means the lesser secret. Just like Ursa Major and Ursa Minor, which means big bear and, you know, littler bear. So it's the same thing. Big secret, littler secret. And the big secret, of course, are what we call the major cards. The major arcana cards, the 22 big cards that start with the Fool and end with the Universe, right? End with the Universe, or the World card. The Universe card in the Crowley deck, or the World card in almost every other deck. Although, most modern decks kind of take after Crowley. They changed some of the cards based on what he did, because he was, no doubt, very smart. Very weird, very eclectic, and very, not only eclectic, but an iconoclast, someone who liked to tear down the way things stood. Probably the most popular deck is known as the Rider-Waite deck, and that was the deck that was commissioned by Arthur Edward Waite to be drawn by Pamela Coleman Smith, Pixie as they knew her. And just a beautiful deck in so many ways, but not perhaps the most insightful deck in so many ways. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a good deck. I have the deck. I have the book written by Arthur Edward Waite on the deck, about the deck. Instructionally, not so great, but that's okay. Doesn't have to be. It allows the reader to come up with their own thing, which is wonderful. That's a good thing. It certainly is. I used, for 45 years, I studied and used the Aleister Crowley Thoth deck, which is a great deck. And then I, after giving a lecture on it, I said, no, my deck. I created my own deck, which I use exclusively. Because it makes sense. That was the meaning of the Golden Dawn. Or the final end piece of the Golden Dawn, when you went through the Golden Dawn Magical Order, or any magical order worth its salt, or beans, you would have to create your own tarot deck. And usually what you did is you would draw your cards or have someone draw them for you if you didn't have the confidence as an artist, or just the confidence to defend your own artwork. And you would have to go through like a PhD oral exam and defend your deck. And then you used that deck for the rest of your life. And it had to be defended because you had to say, they'd say, well, why is this the color blue? And you'd have to say, it's the color blue because this. So tarot is a very specific tool if you know what you're doing. That's why, technically, there are so few tarot decks on the market, but lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of oracle decks. Because when you talk to someone who knows tarot and they understand what the symbolism is supposed to be, they'll say, oh, that's not a tarot deck, that's an oracle deck. Now, I don't care about that stuff. If it's in the box and it's the right shape and it has the right number of cards, it's a tarot deck. You know, if it has the 22 major arcana and the 56 regular cards, 78 cards total, I call it tarot because that's what's going to be. That's good enough. So that's it. There are 22 major arcana cards, right? Boom. And 56 regular cards. Suit cards. And the four suits in modern tarot are, of course, the wands, the cups, the swords, and the discs. Now those, see, we talk about elementalism. I talk about it fairly often. The elementals, there are five elements, and those are fire, water, air, and earth. And there is a fifth element, or in Latin, the quintessence, and that is spirit. Made up of all the other elements, the four other elements, in perfect balance. And how often does that happen? How often do we have the other elements in balance? Well, not very often. Not very often. I think we can see that that is a relative rarity in life. But it can happen, and it does happen. So what we see in tarot is the descent from potential purity to the degradation into not pure. You see, we do see a place where we see the purity of, and that's in the sixth of the suit, the sixth of every suit, the six of wands, the six of cups, the six of discs, the six of earth, well, the other one, don't worry about it. Those sixes are the purest form, and that's a key to understanding tarot. Every number has an inherent meaning, and these numbers are based upon the tree of life, the Atz Chaim, but not the rabbinical, Atz Chaim, tree of life, but the Hermetic. They're two very different things. So just because someone has studied Kabbalah, which I say Kabbalah, others might say something else, and I spell it with a Q, not a K, because I'm speaking of the Hermetic Kabbalah. Others might spell it with a K, referring to the rabbinical. The Hermetic Kabbalah is not linked to Judaism, although it seems to be and may look like it is, but it actually is not. I know, very confusing, but it isn't confusing. What happened was the Hermeticists, the people who studied the works of Hermes Trismegistus, who was probably mythological, a mythic person, but representing the accumulated science mythology of the Egyptians, the Romans, and the Greeks. So we have the mythoscientific concepts of magic and alchemy and science and mathematics, which were consequently being destroyed. So the works of Ptolemy, Claudius Ptolemy, who was a great observational astronomer. His works were being trashed. The works that the great mathematicians were being trashed, because these works gave too much insight, supposedly, into the thoughts of the Almighty. And that was a distinct no-no. We can't allow anyone to know what's going on in the mind of God, because that's capital G. Yeah. And we can't allow anyone to know that, because that is forbidden, verboten, right? So this is what happened. People had to go underground. Things like alchemy that we consider to be, you know, some of the alchemical things that were going on were actually relatively simple, like the properties of certain metals. Like, what is a property of iron? Well, iron is extremely stable except for the fact that it rusts. So it is completely stable in its inner self, but it rusts on the outside. So the symbol for iron was a circle with a cross on top of it, which meant that outwardly it was corrupt, because that was the symbol, the cross was the symbol for earth, and inside, on the, below it, was a symbol, a circle, which was the symbol for the sun or for gold. Okay, so that became the symbol for iron, and it also became the symbol for Mars. Later on, that changed. We had the little arrow gizmo there. And so, and let's take the symbol for Venus. Well, iron, Venus, is ruled by copper, or copper, rather, is ruled by Venus because of its beauty, and it's shiny like, you know, Venus in the sky and so on with diamonds. But so here we have this Venusian concept, and copper is very acidic, and it has a tendency to be corrupt from the inside, and that it flakes, it eats away from the inside. So outwardly it can look just fine, but you can pick up a copper sheet, it will patina, but if you pick up a copper sheet, it can be flaking and completely destroyed on the inside, and it just flakes apart. So they said, aha, so on the outside it is still shiny coppery color, almost gold, but it's copper, and on the inside it is corrupt. So a circle and the corruption below, inside. So it's a circle with the cross below, and that became the symbol for Venus. So we look at the symbols of the planets, and each one is actually a symbol for the metal that it represents. And it's all like that. All of them are like that. So including Mercury, and that's just the way it is. I could go on, but I could get stuck in that, and that so on. And that had to be secret, because those properties of the metals were part of a greater alchemical concept, and that was as above, so below. So in dealing with astrology, which was believed in completely, for example, many people don't realize that Galileo, who was a professor of astrological he medically rectified charts at Pisa, but he was an astronomer, yes, but he was also an astrologer. But a lot of the things that he recognized in the cosmos, in our solar system, were because he was studying for astrology as well. But one of the things that he recognized in his mind was that there were connections between the metals and the certain properties in metals and the way people were. So he would say, for example, that certain Mars types might be outwardly very abrasive and seemingly corrupt, but inside they were very, very strong. And Jupiter types, you know, tin, and he'd look at the properties of tin, and that they were rather inert. but that they were actually very, you know, they lasted a long time, and it was the properties that came together and how they, and so this became very, because what happened to Galileo when he dared to say that the Earth was not the center of the solar system, they threw him in house arrest for the rest of his life, even though he proved that he was right. Because they just couldn't have him saying stuff like that, because it was considered to be heretical. So what happened was people started saying, we have to hide this stuff. So they hid this stuff where they thought they could get away with it the best. And who was, in fact, probably not the most beloved people on the planet? Well, at the time, it was the Jews. So they used their iconography, their system, their tree of life, which is a beautiful, beautiful system, and they encoded it into it. And Tarot, many years later, many things were encoded into it. Usually about at the 15th century, 1600s, we start seeing that sort of thing happening. And then in the 1900s, well, 1800s, and in the 1900s, it really goes kind of woof. Really the late 1900s, 1800s, I'm sorry. And then it becomes very rich with and steeped with what we call modern occultism. And that is people putting a lot of ideas into it, and it becomes a sort of a memory palace for all occultism, because much of this stuff was being lost. A lot of it was being lost. So a modern tarot deck is literally an encyclopedia of occultism. And most people don't know that. They don't know when they're using it that it is absolutely filled with all sorts of stuff, you see. So most people don't realize that there's astrology in it. There is, of course, numerology into it, but that numerology is based on the tree. And that there's all sorts of alchemical symbolism in a good deck. Human nature is built into it. So when we think about the concept of Mercury in Gemini, we think of Mercury in Gemini, well, Mercury rules Gemini, at least in the old system of astrology, it does. Well, and I think it still does. We talk, because I'm a Vedic astrologer, you know. So we think about the concept of the mind. Mercury in Gemini is zip, 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 right? Zip, zip, zip. And so we say that's very, very quick. That's very powerful. And on the tree of life, the number 6 is the perfection of the suit, of perfection. It's in the very middle. It's called Tipareth. And I may not always pronounce them right, but that's all right. I'm kind of self-taught. So in Tipareth, it's the very center of the tree of life. Everything feeds it, and it feeds back out to everything else. It is the sun, S-O-N. It's also the S-U-N, the sun, the center of the solar system. It also, that's one thing about it, the tree of life shows the solar system accurately. It does show the solar system accurately, and did in the 14th century. I love that about it. So it's a piece of genius. It's a piece of absolute, oh my God, they were getting away with using this to radically teach some incredible things that they could have been burned for, that they could have been executed for, and they did it right under the noses of those who were seeking to hurt them. And instead, they just and said, oh, are you interested in this stuff? No, we're not interested in this. This is not our type of thing, you know. Let it be for them, those people. We don't need this. And it was just so brilliant. Just so brilliant. As a matter of fact, on the back of the Crowley deck, there is what looks to be a very, you know, there's a cross. It's known as the Hermetic Cross. But the first time I saw the deck, I thought, oh my God, this is my friend Frodo, the druid. He used it, and I thought, he's using a Christian deck. I was just not horrified, but just totally surprised. And he looked at me and he laughed. He said, calm down, you know, relax. Just give it a chance. And it blew me away, you know. Blew me away. But when you learn that, so the two major sides, I get a little sidetracked. So we have the major arcana and the minor arcana. The major arcana represents major events, but also it can represent people, but I don't think so. To me, it represents stages that we go through in life, and we can go through those stages every day. We can go through these major stages in our life depending upon what's going on. So it's not unusual, for example, to see the death card, and that doesn't mean someone is dying. It means there's a change. You know, and depending upon the severity of it, it can be something big, it can be something small, but it just means, boom, it's over, you've got to deal with it. The Tower card, that can be something a little bit different, because the Tower card, and knowing the stories of the original cards helps a lot. This is where my 45 years of research came in, my incredible stubbornness and stupidity and following red herrings. Oh my God, was I kind of a fool at times? Yes, I was quite a fool because I did things that you wouldn't believe. Oh my God. And Crowley, in his book, The Book of Thoth, where he explains this deck, and he explains it brilliantly, but in code and in puzzles. And I met the man who, Lon Milo Duquette. Nice guy. I was not feeling well the day I met him, so I think I was a jerk. And I wrote him later and apologized, and he was very sweet about it. I was in pain, and I was on medication for that pain because my quack doctor at the time had me on statins that I didn't need to be on, so they were depleting me of everything I needed. And I was in experiment, I was frankly, and that's another story. But he was very kind. I wouldn't have been as kind, perhaps, but he admitted that he says in the foreword, they asked me to write this book about the deck, and I don't know that much about the deck. He's the head of the Thelemic Order of Crowley, or Thelemic, or I don't know. But he was a nice guy. He was a real salesman selling CDs and cards and all sorts of things. And I he's the head of that order. I guess he's probably still around. I met him. I think it was. I don't know how long ago it was. But he was slick, I must say. I don't mean that in a bad way. He was very professional, and he's world famous, and good for him. But what it was obvious is that he didn't care about, he has his own deck, he didn't need this deck, and I found out I didn't either, but I still love it. But he doesn't know that much about the deck. I, on the other hand, had to know everything I could because there's something wrong with me. But when you realize at a certain point that the reason Crowley wrote the book the way he did was to enthuse you to learn as much as you can about everything involved in it, and that he really disliked sycophants. And I get that to a certain extent, you know. But to me, there's no such thing as a bad question. There's no such thing as a bad question, just bad teachers, if I can put it that way. So anyway, I'm getting away from that. So the idea is that when you get into Tarot completely and understand its incredible power to lead you to the right questions and the wrong answers, you learn so much about being human and what Tarot can be. It's just unbelievable. It can literally tell you anything because of your experiences. It's about that. It's about your experiences. It's about life. It's about dealing with everything. I was speaking with someone today, and just boom, right on, right on, right on. That just unbelievable. It was just a discussion. It wasn't a reading. Just we had a couple of questions, you know, about, you know, some issues regarding someone and someone we both know. And it was like, bam, 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 bam. Like I said, not a reading, not a professional thing, just, but boom, 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 boom. So incredibly accurate. And you're stunned. You're stunned. And the person has cards too and was using the cards on the other end, my cards, as a matter of fact. And just, it was like, geez, Louise, how does this work? Well, it works because it's about your integration with whatever it is that happens, you see, and it's trust. You trust in the process. And this other person hasn't spent, you know, the majority of their life doing it, but it works. So Tarot, you use those two things. So the major arcana is the major stuff. The stuff that we can, so for example, the Emperor card. The Emperor card is about responsibility. The Fool card is not about responsibility. The Fool card tells the story of my streaking when I was in college. That's not about responsibility. That's about stupidity, but it's also about freedom. And it's about the fact that my father saw me streaking because he was a professor at that university. And he was supposed to meet me where I was streaking. And it's like, what? Stupid, stupid, stupid Mo. But happy, happy, free, free, hippie Mo with long hair and, you know, naked but wearing shoes and socks because, you know, I'm a tenderfoot. You don't want to get hurt. So, and he saw me and it was okay. And he really didn't seem to mind. He was a little worried about me, like, what's my kid up to in this world, you know? And I'll admit, I was stoned, and it was so beautiful. It was such a beautiful day, and everyone else could run. I was like a blimp where they were jets, you know? So I'm the last, and I didn't get arrested, and we didn't tell my mom, and it was just a wonderful, beautiful day. That's not the Emperor. The Emperor is, in my deck, is a lighthouse keeper. Searching for boats, ships, anything that might hit the reef on a foggy night. You know, there's this bright light behind him, and he's searching because that's responsibility. That's the Emperor. The Emperor is filled with responsibility. So these are the major things in life that we are or we are not. You know, the Lover's card is just about that, the bond between either people. I have twin grandsons. They have a bond that I can't believe. They fight, you know, like Wolverines, and then they love each other so desperately. It's incredible to see. But yeah, it's like, wow, that's amazing. It's that Gemini energy. That's the thing about it. And you know, the 22 cards are run by the planets. There are planet cards. There are astrological cards. There are elemental cards. And they all fit so beautifully together. And that's Tarot. Tarot is thoughtful. Tarot is not arbitrary. It is put together in a beautiful way that if you learn it, it's like a symphony. And it works so well. And it is so incredibly dynamic that it just oh my God, there's just nothing but awe. Nothing but awe when I deal with Tarot. It's like, oh my God, how does this work? Well, it works because it works. There's something about being in tune with it, especially the elemental aspects of it, because the elemental forces, I believe, have intelligences behind them, and they are what make everything work. Those five forces make everything work. Really four. That's all we can really interact with. They make everything work. And those four elemental forces are, in fact, a major part of all magical work, especially in Western magic. But that's a different story, not for today. So then let's look at the minors a little bit, because that's where a lot of these elementals come into. In the minor cards, we have, of course, the numbers 1 through 10. 1 through 10. And those numbers 1 through 10, well, The aces are all the potential of something. So people who look at an ace and say, it shall be. Well, I think that's a misreading. Now, for them, if that's how they always see it, then that's good, you see. And their experience, that may be how it works. But for me, the aces are all the potential. It's a seed of something. It's just a seed. Well, not all seeds grow, and it depends upon how much time and energy you're willing to put into something. But it's a seed. And in my deck, there's always that potential that it won't work. You have to kind of see it. And I read reversals. I always read reversals. And there's always that sense that on an ace reverse that... this is not so much. But reversals come with experience and with practice. So you have to kind of get that feel. In the number twos, the twos are all about kind of the balance between things. And also about, well, they are, in fact, I call them the purest. I said the purest about the six earlier. That was wrong. That's the sixes are the perfection. We'll get to that. The twos are the purest form. Why? Because the aces are all the potential. So the twos are all the purest form. It's the first time we see that element in a form coming into being. It's like, okay, the threes are all the movement of that energy. I don't have time to get into these, you see, but I can throw them at you. The fours are all the first time they become solid in anything, because like a square is the first solid geometric form. Well, a square is pretty, you know, stable. We call it stable instead of solid. So we think about the four of discs. The four of discs is power. Power. That's pretty solid. You know, the four of wands. Well, you know, the four of wands is completion. The other thing, modern tarot cards have names to them. When they're just game cards, they don't have names because they're like playing cards, poker. You know, you don't throw down a three of swords and say, oh, that's the sorrow card. You know, the three of spades. You know, that's just the three of spades. You know, so, but the fours are all pretty solid. The fives are the difficulty of the suit. Yeah, all the fives are difficult cards. You've noticed that if you have a deck, probably. The sixes are all the perfection of the suit. Why? Because they relate to Tifereth, which I mentioned earlier. They're the perfection of the suit. Perfect. They're perfect. So the sixes have names like the six of wands is victory. Ah, victory. Well, that's pretty good, you know. The six of cups. Well, the six of cups, you know. We're looking at the Six of Cups, and it's beautiful. It's ruled by the moon in Taurus. The moon in Taurus. So that is victory. Is that the Six of Cups? I may, getting old, may not be what it is. But I think that is what it is. The Six of Swords. That may be, oh gosh, Six of Swords. Oh, the Six of Cups. The Six of Discs is success. I'm not going to get caught up on this because I'll spend the next 45 minutes nitpicking myself to death. The sevens are all the difficulty of the suit. The difficulty, not the difficulty, the fall from perfection. The fall from perfection. So in the Six of Cups, oh, I've got to remember it now. The Six of Cups. Well, anyway, the Seven of Cups is debauchery or just debauch, because in the Six, oh, I can't remember it. Getting old. I used to have these. Well, I did it for all my life. You know, I've got it. I can see it. I just can't. It doesn't matter. Oh, God. Well, we'll see how I do in the next few years. Think good thoughts, my friends. But so the sevens can be very, very difficult cards. So, for example, we had victory. That's what the seven of wands was, six of wands was. In seven, we have valor. So you're able to have victory, but victory is fleeting, so you have to pick up another wand and fight, you know. So you need valor, you need that sort of thing. So the sevens are all the fall from perfection. You have to do something. You have to fight. And the all sevens are ruled ultimately by Venus because of where it is on the tree of life. This is all mixed in. I mean, it's complicated, but it's not. Once you learn the tree of life, you go, oh, I get that. You see, the eights are all the intellectual response to falling from perfection. So the sevens are all the emotional response. And the eights are all the intellectual response. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. And the nines are all the best it gets, the best the suit can get. Now, that's different than perfection. It's the best it gets, right? So, and the tens are all the disintegration, the beginning, the degradation, and the beginning of the end of the suit. So a lot of people say, oh, the tens, oh, they're great, like the wealth card, the ten of discs. That's such a great card. Not for me. The ten, oh no, the ten of discs, I don't want anything to do with that card because it's the story of King Midas, right? All that money. Right now, we're kind of in the midst of a oligarchy. At least I think so. I don't think I'm the only one. And there, you can see what's going on. It's like weird stuff is happening. Unusual stuff is happening. Unpopular, insecure, chaotic stuff is happening. And that's the 10, right? Tariffs, 10. Money, 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 money. Money, money, money makes the world go round, does it? Does it? Clink, clink, clink. You know, the Ten of Wands, the Ten of Wands, yeah, which one is ruin? That's the Ten of Swords. Ten of Swords is ruin, yeah, not so good, not so good. You know, so you get these, you learn these different energies associated with every number, and that helps you to understand the cards themselves. That's part of the anatomy of these cards. Now, let's talk about royalty for a second, because this time is flying by. The royalty of the cards is very fascinating. And the royalty is, we have, now I'm going to lay it on you here, it's different than the page thing. There is no page there is in the Rider-Waite deck. But in Tarot, as I think it should be, and as Crowley did and others, there should be a queen, a knight, a prince, and a princess. Ah, why? Why no king? Well, it has to do with the idea that once there was a queen, and her husband was a knight, and the knight went out and he kept the place safe. He kept people alive. He went out, and if there was something happening at a boundary, he went out and made sure that it was, you know, not going to be overrun. He was that guy. That guy. And they had twins. They had twin children. And one was called Luke, and the other one was called Leia. No, I'm kidding. But not so much. They had twins. And since it was a matriarchy, they knew that the young princess would rise to the throne. Because the only way we can truly know for sure that the royal blood is correct is through the mother. That's biology. So in Tarot is in fact a matriarchy. And that's the key. I love it. Don't you love that? I love it. And that was wiped out at one time by, frankly, men who didn't like that. They didn't like the whole idea. So the matriarchy concept of Tarot is that the prince, which is why at least in the Crowley deck, the princesses are all standing at their altar, protecting it. And the princes, the males, are all sitting in a chariot being drawn by the cherub, or the angel, if you will, of their elemental force. So the elemental force of air is an eagle, and the elemental force of earth is a bull, and so on and so forth. So they are going to be drawn into another elemental realm, where they will then meet a young princess, whom they will wed, and then become her husband, and then become their knight. They can't become the king. Why? Because they're not of that element, but they can take on the armor of, but they can never be the king of that realm, but they'll be the knight of that realm. And that is what Star Wars is about. Yes, George Lucas conferred with Joseph Campbell, who basically told him this story, not in Tarot terms, but certainly in mythological terms. Because that's what it was about. It's about the line of matriarchy and how important that was to ancient cultures. That's how it goes. Real Tarot, good Tarot, and I'm not saying that other decks are not that way. Use the Prince Princess page and all that stuff if you like that. But understand that that was the original concept before, that matriarchy was incredibly important. And that if you look at this deck, or my deck, that the princesses are all going to inherit that realm. And then knowing where the prince comes from can sometimes really help you in a reading. So you know where a princess is and what's going to come to her. You know, you can kind of get a feel for the energy that it becomes. And I don't have time. Obviously, I have like 2 minutes. I think I have more than that. That's the weird clock, but just a few minutes left. So the royalty can, of course, relate to human beings, real people. But sometimes they relate simply to energetic forces, because each one of those cards, those suit cards, the royalty, have specific energies, elementally speaking. They represent the elemental forces themselves as personalities. So you get to know them. You get to know that the Queen of Wands is, well, you don't want to make her mad. If you like lava and volcanoes, make her mad. You know, get to know her. She can be very helpful, very warm. Think of Pele, not the soccer star, but the goddess of volcanoes in Hawaii, you know? Crowley chose for his Queen of Swords, the story of Judith and Holofernes. Read up on that. Pump that into your search engine. Judith and Holofernes. It's a chilling story of patience and revenge. And it's like, holy macaroni. This is not someone you want to, you know, turn on. And it's a brilliant story, and it's quite a tale. This is the power of Tarot, and it not only can give you a situation, but a person too. When you really work with these cards and start doing readings, you'll be surprised at how amazing they can be, you know, and you can do it. You can do it. It takes a little bit of, you know, you have to say to them, okay, I want to learn you. I want to become part of you, and I want, more importantly, you to become part of me. Get to know me. Is there an intelligence behind these things? You're darn tootin' there is. And that intelligence is always looking for good students, for someone who really wants to do the job and do it properly. And that's you. That's you. Get excited about it. Man, it turns me on. It makes me frothy at the mouth. Yeah, you know, I've got some there, yeah. Okay, but it makes me, you know, I get tingly all over when I think about the ability to delve into this amazing world of ours and get answers by turning a card. There's something quite exciting about all of it. I think you can find it too. I'll take this up again sometime. That's just the basic beginning to understanding this thing. There's much more to it. But that's a good start.
Don't you think?
I think so. When they encoded these things, the colors, the ideas, a lot of it is in color. A lot of it is... Now, in my deck, I just went ahead and said, well, these are my cards. I use them. And I'm going to do what I want to do. And, for example, here I have my my Knight of Cups. And it's a lighthouse with a huge wave, and you can see that there's a face and some gigantic, like, hands in that wave about to engulf the lighthouse. But the lighthouse is going to be fine, because they're built for that. But it's this huge wave about to engulf this lighthouse. And the colors are very specific. They're blue-greens and that sort of thing. And it's like, okay, this means something very specific to me. And if I see this in a person, if I see this energy, or if it's coming for a person, there's a difference. I know they'll be okay, but I also know it's, if they're not ready for it, it could be a bit of a surprise. Anyway. Okay, that's today. Listen, what's happening in the world? Relax. Get your cards out. Get out your I Ching coins. Meditate. Play a musical instrument. Have fun. All right. And remember, I love you, and I mean that, and you know it. You can feel it. Until next week, I wish you all peace and love. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.